Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey, 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 hey.
Haudenosaunee Oneida singer-songwriter Joanne Shenandoah from Silver Wave Records entitled Prayer for Peace. This particular song was entitled Messenger, an honoring song to those who bring the message for peace and justice. Ashkwe greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Today's program is part four of our conversation with environmental social justice community activist Joy Ezell. She shares Yat Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and promoting environmental social justice. Joy Ezell's activism exemplifies the important ethic of thinking globally and acting locally. Some of the issues she is fighting with her community organization include environmental, economic, and social impacts of the multinational corporation PG&E Buckeye Paper Mill, a proposed 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant, and United States military plans to locate a cruise missile bombing range in her area. These and other issues are topics of today's conversation when Joy visited us here at Yat Kitishi Native Center. Yat Kitishi Native Center's concern for protecting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life, in keeping with the indigenous ethic of caring for future generations, is why we are honored to be part of the worldwide environmental justice anti-globalization movement. Most every Wolf Mountain Radio program focuses on some aspect of defending our biosphere, as well as promoting sovereignty and self-determination of traditional cultures around the world. I personally have had the honor, over the past 35 years, to see firsthand and fight against many cases of environmental and social injustices in different parts of the globe. In my travels, I have met many fine and courageous people who are working to create a better world. Each Earth Warrior I've met renews my energy to continue to defend Mother Earth. Joy Ezell is one such friend. Joy Ezell and I share a similar background and experiences as Earth Justice activists. We both grew up in rural areas where agriculture and forestry dominate the political and economic society. Like feudal kingdoms, agribusiness and forest industries rule the region. Anyone who questions those dragons does so under great threat. As a forest ecologist who has spent much of my life fighting forest industries around the world who destroy and pollute traditional cultures and ecosystems, Joy Ezell's battle against the Buckeye pulp and paper mill is particularly special to me. This company is responsible for serious environmental health impacts from their poisonous discharge effluents that contaminate the region's creeks and rivers and poison underground aquifer needed for drinking water. The mill also is the engine that drives the excessive and unsustainable cutting down of forests, raping the land. Historically, the landscape of the region now called North Florida, where Joy lives, was a beautiful ecosystem with a rich diversity of plant and animal species. Variations in topography, soil types, and hydrology created a unique watershed. It was first home to ancient culture peoples, such as the Apalaches, Tallahassees, Timucuas, and other tribal nations who lived in peace with nature. The arrival of Spanish explorers to the so-called New World did have an impact to the land, but the forest and wet prairie creek environment was still able to survive. Southeast Indians, who are now known as Florida Seminoles and Yuchi Creeks, for generations lived in harmony with this land. Early white settlers, like Joy Ezell's family, found the region a near paradise. Large cypress trees and longleaf pine, hardwood hammocks, marshes, creeks, and freshwater springs allowed rural communities to flourish. Coastal areas had the bounty of the Gulf of Mexico. Now, this once beautiful area, like so many places around the world, is under assault. This biologically fragile area is quickly being destroyed. The unique old-growth forests have been cut down to feed the ever-demanding pulp and paper industry's greed for timber. PG&E's Buckeye Mill is like a giant vacuum cleaner sucking up the forests. It leaves a scarred landscape. So-called reforestation is nothing more than agro-industrial plantations, monoculture tree farms, which depend upon heavy inputs of chemical fertilizers, herbicides, and insecticides, now predominantly the landscape. Wiped out are the unique species of fauna and flora that once supported a diverse variety of wildlife. Hazardous waste, such as highly toxic dioxins, which are carcinogenic and mutagenic poisons, spew out from the Buckeye paper plant. These poisons greatly impact animal, plant, and human health. I first met Joy Ezell at a conference focusing on dioxin more than a decade ago. The conference, sponsored by the great citizen activist organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, documented testimony from many grassroots groups that were and continue to battle corporate polluters. This great environmental justice organization, Center for Health, Environment, and Justice, under the leadership of our friend Lois Gibbs, still helps communities around the nation fight toxic waste sites. Lois, by the way, organized the Love Canal campaign against the infamous Hooker Chemical Company that contaminated her neighborhood in the 1970s. Not too long ago, I had the privilege to be a speaker with Lois Gibbs again at the 25th Anniversary Legal Environmental Action Foundation Environmental Justice Conference in Tallahassee, Florida. On my way there, I had the opportunity to again visit the Buckeye plant to witness the paper mill's pollution. situation that I have briefly described exemplifies many places throughout the world which are under attack by multinational corporations and government land use plans. While my conversation with Joy Ezell focuses on the region now called North Florida, the issues facing her community could be nearly anywhere in the world. Florida, in many ways, is like a so-called third world country. Much of the state is run by a government corporate elite partnership. Forest industries, such as in Joy's Taylor County, phosphate mining in central Florida, or agribusinesses such as sugarcane, citrus, vegetables, and even cattle ranching in the region where I live, not to mention unsustainable urbanization, are greatly impacting the environment and human societies. It is also important to remember that Florida is still Dixieland, the Deep South. While there has been some cosmetic change in relations between the races, socioeconomic differences and perhaps more subtle segregation still exists, especially in the region where Joy Ezell is from. This makes her activism very special and very important. Yad Kiddushi Native Center is privileged to have Joy Ezell on our program today. Welcome, Joy Ezell. In our conversation, I would like for you to share a little bit of personal background about your experience growing up in rural America, rural Florida. You have a very interesting business card underneath your name. Says environmental activist, the organization HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment. But I know you also share a lot of common concerns and experiences and even education about rural community development and agriculture, as I did. Would you please share some of your background in agriculture and rural community development, how you worked for chemical companies as a pesticide salesperson after college, and that was really the catalyst that got you thinking and got you to become an environmental activist?
Grew up in Perry, Florida, up in Taylor County, up in North Florida. Grew up on a farm, went off to school and studied agricultural business, and went to work for a chemical company and sold some of the worst agricultural chemicals that there were known to man, some FMC Ag Chemicals. This is the company that I worked for first. So I got to learn a whole lot about different kinds of chemicals and what they did, and I was afraid that I was ruining the environment. And this was way back in the 70s now, so it was a long time ago. Got really worried about what I was doing about the environment, and I thought that I was doing the wrong thing. And so I went back to school and got my master's, and unfortunately I went to work for another chemical company and sold even worse chemicals than I did to start off with. But it taught me a whole lot, because when I moved back home in 1981, first thing my grandmother told me was that the water was polluted at home in Taylor County. And I said, "What are you talking about, Mama?" And she said, "Well, Buckeye's in the water. You know, you can't drink the water down here anymore because it's got Buckeye." And what she meant was the paper mill effluent was in the water, that they had contaminated the aquifer. And so, consequently, our well water was contaminated. I couldn't believe that nobody was, you know, raising all kinds of holy hell about it, but nobody was saying a word. It was very, very a quiet thing, and only really a very few people actually knew about it. So I started asking questions, and I found out that some of those chemicals that were in our water were very similar to some of the chemicals that I had been selling for all those years. My son was about 12 years old at that time, and his name was Trey. And every day when I took him to school or took him back home from school, we had to cross the Fenn Holloway River, and that's the river that's so polluted from the mill. And he would look at me and he would say, "Mama, why don't you make them clean up that river? It's so nasty, it's so black, and it's so ugly, it's so polluted." And, you know, kids think you can do everything in the world, and I just kind of passed it off for a while there, and I said, "Yeah, sure, Trey, you know, I'll get to that. That'll be my next project." He kept on at me until I really did get interested in it. No, so I started asking questions. I made a trip to the DER, and of course they didn't want to talk to me. And I went and made a trip up to Atlanta to the EPA, and they pretty much wanted to just brush me aside and get me out of there. But the more I learned, the more upset I became, and the more convinced I was that we had a really, really bad problem in Taylor County with the river. So that's what got me started on all my environmental work. I found out that I remember the day in 1986 that I found out that the dioxin that was being sent out from the mill in the effluent was exactly the same chemical as Agent Orange. And that was a very depressing day for me, because back then there was hardly anybody for me to talk to at home about that kind of thing. You know, nobody wanted to talk to me about it. It was a taboo subject in Taylor County. You just didn't criticize the mill because that was where everybody worked, the main source of income for people there, the only big employer in the county. And you just didn't really want to criticize them very much, or you'd be blacklisted. And when I finally did sort of come out of the closet about it and become vocal about it, the local paper called me an armed radical environmental terrorist. And when they called me that, I knew I was doing the right thing. I knew I was making points and doing what I should be doing. I was on the right track. I met Onis years ago. We've been to several environmental meetings together. We were at the dioxin meeting in Tallahassee years ago together. We were both at the Cassini demonstration back in 89. We've been to several different kinds of environmental and peace meetings through the years, and I'm so pleased to be with y'all today.
In our conversation, we touched on how the socioeconomic power relationship between government and industry is an interwoven system. For example, how many top business executives often become senior government officials. One case I mentioned is how the chief of the U.S. Forest Service was formerly the CEO of a multinational timber company. In many ways, there is a revolving door between government and industry. Many private sector lobbyists are former government officials who were in charge of the agencies they now lobby to. This is quite common in military contractors, for example, who often hire retired admirals or generals who previously decided weapon systems procurement. At lunch, Joy, you mentioned former U.S. Congressman Grant from your county, who upon losing re-election somehow became involved in brokering an energy project oil pipeline overseas. Joy, would you briefly share this story with us?
Back during George Bush Sr.'s administration, Billy Grant, who was born and raised there, you know, in Taylor County, had been elected to Congress, and he was a Republican. Well, he was a Democrat when he was elected. But during George Sr.'s administration, he changed his registration and affiliation to Republican, and the next election after that, he was soundly defeated. He was a little bit before his time, I think, on switching parties there. And this was back, 96, back during that time. It was interesting what we found out that he was doing later, after he was defeated. He suddenly had this big, important job over in Russia and Afghanistan, Iraq, over in those countries, building, overseeing the building of oil pipelines. So he managed to make some friends somewhere when he was a congressman that made sure that he had a good job after he got through being a congressman. So this is how those kind of things work. I mean, if you do in Washington what your correct political people say you're supposed to do, they will pay you off with a good job later on, which I think is totally incredible that a guy from Taylor County managed to make that many good contacts while he was a congressman, and even he knew how to play the game and is still playing the game. So he's probably pulling down several hundred thousand dollars a year being some kind of an oil company go-between, let's put it that way, just because he played the game the right way.
Right. My next question focuses on environmental justice and your experience as an activist working within a region that is predominantly a low-income, racially mixed community. One fundamental meaning of environmental justice to me is the fundamental right to political, economic, cultural, and environmental self-determination of all peoples. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's definition is, quote, environmental justice is the fair treatment of people of all races, income, and cultures with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Fair treatment implies that no person or group of people should shoulder a disproportionate share of the negative environmental impacts resulting from the execution of this country's domestic and foreign policy programs, unquote. Unfortunately, environmental injustices, environmental racism, are still the norm for many poor and people of color communities. African American, Hispanic Latin American, Native American, Asian Pacific Islanders, and poor white people of America continue to be victims of environmental discrimination. As you know, I've had the honor to be part of the establishment and leadership of the National Environmental Justice Movement. I've been privileged to be a participant in a number of national and intertribal environmental justice gatherings, such as being a delegate and Indigenous Peoples Caucus member to the 1991 First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit. I mention this because of that conference's historic writing of the 17 Principles of Environmental Justice, which continues to guide the movement today. Joy, having visited your region and seeing the Buckeye paper mill up close, I would have to say that this pollution case is also an environmental justice situation. The neighborhood near the mill is predominantly African American. I am interested to hear about the demographics of Taylor County. Also, as was mentioned in our conversation, North Florida is still a very southern traditional area. The legacy of the Confederacy, or what is also termed Dixieland, where racial segregation was a norm not too long ago, probably still permeates like the pulp smell from the mill. It is my understanding that when PG&E Company built the Buckeye plant, a number of poor black families had to be moved. Although, if I remember correctly, their relocated homes is still the closest neighborhood to this paper mill. This minority community probably must be suffering or is at serious risk for many serious environmental health problems due to the air and water pollution from the Buckeye plant. I know of a number of Native American communities where pulp and paper mill pollution has contaminated the reservation with serious environmental health disease impacts, not to mention the contamination of Indian land. Would you please talk about the situation with the Buckeye mill and your experience with this community?
Yeah, it's interesting how all this thing came about through the years. Back in the 30s and 40s and very early 50s, the area where the mill is now was a big lumber mill called the Foley Timber Company is what it was called back then. And when the Procter & Gamble came in there in the late 40s and started building the mill, they actually moved the black families from that area across the road about, I'd say it was a quarter to a half a mile, and set up a whole new black community there. They moved them from the places where they did live and moved them out so they could build the mill. They moved them to an area where, obviously, once the mill started contaminating the river, their wells were contaminated very soon after that. And, of course, nobody took responsibility for that, and these people were having to drink polluted water, very much so. So when I first got started with this thing, I realized that they were the closest community to the mill, and they were being most affected by the contaminated water. And so I went and worked with them. I went to each home there and met each one of them and sat down and talked with them. I met their preacher at the little church that was there, and he was just a wonderful person, and he helped me to get together with them and teach them about the pollution and what we could do about it. And it was very interesting when we filed our big class action suit. They were involved with us very much as plaintiffs in the class action suit about the contamination of the water. I've always been so proud of them because they were so brave to come forward and do this, because it was a really radical thing for them to do at the time, because these people were very shy and very much, I don't want to say withdrawn, but they were never the kind of people that would come out in the open and demonstrate or anything. They were pretty much beaten down and trodden down from all the years of living where they lived, economically in very, very bad shape. They were just, as poor as you could possibly imagine. And you got to understand, too, the air in the area is so bad that it will eat the screens away off your house. It'll eat if you have a light fixture hanging from the ceiling, it'll actually eat away the metal. So these people were living in very, very bad conditions. Once I got started with this and it became well known, it was in the newspapers everywhere, that the water in the whole area was contaminated, the PR guy from the mill actually went to the families out there that were still using well water and took the pump off their well, so they had no water. So they called me on the phone, and I immediately began raising total hell about it. And I called him on the phone, and I said, "You will take them bottled water today. you'll take it out there or you're going to have to face me, and we're going to get it in the press, and you are going to be really embarrassed about this. So he started supplying bottled water to the families out there. Of course, that still didn't make me happy. I made him run city water out there to the community. Well, the city water's not much better than any other water because it comes from the same aquifer that everybody's well water comes from. It's exact. There's only one aquifer there. So that's not a whole lot better, but at least they did have some water that's occasionally tested and is supposed to meet the standards. These people are just the most wonderful people you've ever seen in your life. They're kind, and they're just really downtrodden, and I really feel for them. And I've tried to work with the other community, other black communities there around home, and not met with as much success as I have with those that live right close to the mill. I think they love me and appreciate what I've been trying to do to help them and to help all the people in Taylor County. But it's an interesting thing to live where everything, where in a company town where everything is controlled by one company. It kind of gives you some insight as to how other communities operate that are in the same situation. And these kind of companies, these big polluters, don't move to areas where people have money, where people are economically secure or politically, that's right, plugged in, let's say, politically active. They go to communities where the people are poor and don't have any power.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a thought that Peter told after story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on earth. And now you see the light, you stand up for your right. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Jump, jump.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
We can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your right.
Lord, Lord.
Get up, stand up.
Keep us traveling on.
Don't give up the fight.
Yeah.
Sick and tired of your easy schism game, dying to go to heaven in Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand, Almighty God is a living man. You can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So now we see the light.
What you gonna
we gonna stand up for?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
You better get up,
stand up
in the morning.
Give it up,
stand up for your right.
Stand up right now.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up, don't give it up.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your right.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
You can't
do it. Don't give up the fight.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Reggae singer-songwriter Bob Marley from his Bob Marley and the Wailers CD, Legend. That special song was entitled, Get Up, Stand Up, Fight for Your Rights. My guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, is community activist Joy Ezell. Joy, I want to focus a bit more on the socio-cultural aspect of living in an area that is dominated by one or a few major economic industries, such as a pulp and paper plant like the Buckeye Mill where you live. I too have lived in a small mill town where the forest industries pretty much control the politics and therefore influence the predominant attitude of people, since the majority of residents in the town and region in some way derive their livelihoods from the timber company. Anyone who questions or disagrees with the local government industry power structure risks losing his or her job. Community activists are often disliked and harassed by the community, even when trying to work for the betterment of the community. It can be very hard to work for and bring about environmental protection and social justice. This is especially difficult in small towns where change from the status quo is often resisted. When you add issues of racial prejudice into this situation, change is even more difficult. I remember much discrimination against my Wabanaki Indian people from the white townspeople adjacent to the reservation. The town, Old Town Maine, is a paper mill town. One of the so-called prominent citizens of the town also served as Speaker of the Maine House of State Representatives. So the huge timber company, paper mill, had a lot of political and economic control over the area, including the majority of people's attitude not to question the forest industry. We Native Americans have suffered much from toxic air and water emissions from both the pulp mill and chemical pesticides used by the forest and agribusiness industries. POPs, persistent organic pollutants, in the Penobscot River, for example, continue to cause great harm to our sacred Mother Earth and illness to not only our relatives, the animals and plants, but also to our American Indian people. The so-called federal and state environmental regulatory agencies continue to issue permits to polluting industries, even though there is great scientific documentation. This is one of many environmental social justice examples I could speak more about. This is why I am active in the Indigenous Environmental and People of Color Environmental Justice Movement. I personally was harassed many times by white town folks when I fought to protect Mother Earth in Wabanaki territory, now called Maine. I've also experienced threats from my years of environmental justice activism in helping a number of communities in North America fight for earth justice, as have some of my friends, such as yourself. Joy, would you please talk more about the situation in your region of the Deep South? What are the attitudes of the folks there with respect to issues your organization, HOPE, is fighting for? As was mentioned earlier, Taylor County is a typical traditional southern town. I'm sure the legacy of racial segregation, the KKK, white supremacy, prejudice is probably still present, although perhaps a bit more camouflage than years ago when black people and Native Americans were openly despised and discriminated against. Joy, would you please comment on this question?
Well, it's interesting to be from a place like Taylor County. I'm fifth generation born and raised there, and so is my husband, so we have a long history from there. Taylor County is way behind the rest of the world. One of my girlfriends says when you come into the county, sit your watch back 40 years, which is pretty much close to the truth in a lot of ways. It's a shame, but that really is, in a lot of ways, the way it is. I keep thinking that we're making some progress along the way. The more people who move into Taylor County who are not connected with the mill in any way, I think is probably going to make a big difference through the years, because they won't owe the mill anything, and they will come with a whole different view of the way people should treat each other. And they won't have this history behind them of being owned or operated, you might say, or owing anything to Procter & Gamble. So it's going to make a big difference in the attitude of people as we get more new people into the county. You hate to see a place develop a whole lot, you know, that used to be pretty pristine and where there wasn't a lot of development on the coastline, but that's progress, and I know that that's going to happen. And if you think about it this way, do you want pollution or do you want development? Well, personally, I'd rather have development than pollution if you had to make a choice between the two. And I know that's maybe compromising a whole lot, but if you could have development that would be sensible and well-planned, then it might make a whole lot of difference versus having pollution that's just totally unbridled and not controlled at all. But the attitude of the people needs to change a whole lot in Taylor County and a lot of places in the South. These company towns, places where one company controls the economy and pretty much controls how people think, are going to have to change. You know, it's real common to see Confederate flags and the stereotypical Southern redneck, you know, in the pickup truck with the dog box and the gun rack and the rebel flag on the truck. And, you know, that's pretty common up there where I'm from. Keep thinking that if people are more tolerant of each other and learn to be more tolerant of each other, that kind of thing will one day maybe just disappear into the background. I'm not sure if it ever will or not. There's a long history of prejudice and injustice, not only in my community, but in a lot of communities in the South. You know, I don't know all the answers to how to solve it. I hope that we're making some progress along the way. I think that people just need to learn to be tolerant of each other and need to be understanding. And I would hope that people would learn how to love and cherish peace rather than hatred and war.
Sacred fires lifted up like holy hands. Understand there's something wrong, there's trouble on the land. Crystal photos, hungry eyes, conquistadors, golden lies. So many ways to steal the prize. Who cares if one more native dies? King's decree across the waves and Comiendo makes us slaves. The Holy Church, the blood that saves 100 million unmarked graves. Our relatives are watching, our spirit helpers near. 500 years of genocide, who's left to hear? Who's left to hear? Sacred Pueblos, Cupola Gold, Jamestown, Raleigh, Roanoke, Manhattan Quakers and Hudson's Bay, Beaver Otter all killed away. Louisiana to Duluth, Venus buried the white man's truth. Northwest Passage, empty ploy, Franklin studies Iroquois. Tuberculosis and influenza, typhoid fever, nations ended. Corpses more than many wars. Typhus, measles, millions more. Cholera on many fronts. Smallpox blankets more than once. Plagues destroy our strength and pride. Biologic genocide. Our relatives are watching, our spirit helpers near. 500 years of genocide. Who's left to hear? Who's left to hear? Walter Cassatt, John Cadell, Gene Breakhart, and Leonard Peltier, Sitting Bull and Neil Cole, Corn Planter, Crazy Horse, there's more to know. Astronaut enough, Leonard Peltier, Sitting Bull and Neil Cole, Corn Planter, Crazy Horse, there's more to know. Astronaut enough, Wolfgang and Joe Johnson, and they have spoken. Claude Morgan, B. Swanson, Iron Legs, Wallace.
Our bones, careless words that mock our road, chip our water, crazy horse liquor, Indian givers who take back quicker. Redskins braves, the fighting Sioux, Eskimo pies and red man tobacco, a billion insults to the map. When we object, we're on the warpath. Standing strong and tall, like the red oak leaves, we remain to snap the links that formed our chain.
You are listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitichi Native Center. Yat-Kitichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat-Kitichi Native Center is an intertribal culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat-Kitichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their worldviews in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat-Kitichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat-Kitichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kedichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the Native and international press. Yat Kedichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yat Kedichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yat Kedichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yat Kedichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yat Kedichi's Kinonwatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yat Kedichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yat Kedichi Native Center, write to Yat Kedichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yat Kedichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
The music you heard prior to our Yat Kedichi Native Center program identification was from Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Annie Humphrey from her Makoshe music CD entitled The Heron Smiled. The name of that song was 500 Years. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Next week on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, we continue our conversation with Joy Ezell in Program 5 of our very fine interview conversation. If you want to find out more about the subjects that we are discussing in this series, you can check out Joy Ezell's organization, HOPE, Help Our Polluted Environment, website at www.hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. Once again, if you want to learn more about the subjects we talked about, you can look at HOPE's website. That's www.hopeforcleanwater@yahoogroups.com. We're going to conclude today's program with a traditional honoring drum from the drum Whitetail. This is from Arbor Record CD's collection Thunder Drums No. 2. The song is entitled For Our People, featuring Whitetail. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker, thanking you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinoan Wentakwasin, to all of our relations.